shall have it. Bid farewell to your friends. You have just a few hours to live.
Hey there, and welcome back to another episode of Marvel by the Month. My name is Brian Stratton.
And I am Rob Milne.
And we have a special guest in the studio tonight, Mr. Noah Campbell.
Hello there. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Noah is a buddy of ours. He is also a giant nerd, and we thought we would bring him in so that he could read some 1960s comics and have a chuckle or two. Noah, had you read any of these before?
No, I've never read any of these.
Awesome.
And they were a delight.
Well, we'll be getting into them in just a little bit. So these are the comics that were cover dated January 1963 with a newsstand date of November 62. So we're going to be checking out Fantastic Four number 10, Incredible Hulk number 5, Journey into Mystery number 88, Strange Tales number 104, and Tales to Astonish number 39. These lists of books are getting longer every episode we're doing. Have you noticed this?
Turns out that there's a few heroes nowadays in the Marvel Universe, so it might get a little bigger.
Yeah, I was kind of looking down the road. Like, if we keep doing this podcast into the, I think, the 70s or something, we're going to wind up doing like 18 or 20 books a episode, and it's just going to be insane.
That's not fun.
We'll have to divide and conquer. We'll get more guests and everyone can read five comics, you know, something like
that. Yeah, there you go. Well, we'll cross that bridge when we come.
I have no problem reading 20 comics a week. That is something I do now.
Yeah. Cool. Rob, what was going on in November 1962 when all this was going down?
Well, you may recall last month there was a little kerfuffle called the Cuban Missile Crisis. That is resolved, and the Soviet Union and the United States finally reached the final agreement, the terms for Soviet removal of nuclear missiles from Cuba, and confirmed. So President Kennedy was able to announce that, you know, everything's cool now, move the doomsday clock back to whatever, 10 minutes to midnight. the United States conducted an atmospheric nuclear test for the last time. So then it just started doing the underground tests from there on. Soviet Union would stop later, 2 months later on Christmas Day. So, you know, between the two of them, they stopped blowing things up in the sky. China stopped in the 80s or in 1980. So,
okay,
yeah.
Great. Well,
so we, you know, we sort of got more civilized and blew up underground, caused more mole men, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and actually, a fair amount of the stuff that's going on in these issues this month happens underground and involves radiation. So maybe Stan Lee knew something that we didn't know.
Or he read a newspaper.
Let's see. What else is going on? The midterm elections happened, the 1962 midterm elections. Democratic Party maintained control of the House of Reps, increased a majority in the Senate. A fellow who you might have heard of, Richard Nixon, got absolutely crushed in his attempt to become the governor of California. And the next day he would infamously say, "You won't have Dick Nixon to kick around anymore." And that was true. We never heard from Richard Nixon again after 1962. Amazing.
Richard Milhouse Nixon. No one knows that name.
Nope. Not at all. Let's see. Another little bit of political news. President Kennedy signed Executive Order 11063, which was to end discrimination in public housing that received any federal assistance, which is great. Considering that obviously racial tensions were definitely on the rise in America. But in sort of an example of like what passed for like actual civil rights movements, at this point, it was prospective only, and it didn't apply to low-income units built or planned before November 20, 1962. So it was almost completely toothless. But, you know, that's what we could get through the government at that point.
Yeah.
What else we got?
There was a terrorist attack on the Salt Lake Temple, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So, It was bombed. FBI agents state that the explosive had been wrapped around the door handles on the southeast entrance of the temple. So we have a, I don't know if anyone, it doesn't say how many people were harmed that we found, but it was a pretty big explosion. So somebody, you know, attacking a church. It was a sort of en vogue.
Back in the 60s. We have a rich history of attacking churches in this country. I'm surprised it was Latter-day Saints, though, because I always thought they were racist attacks. But that, I don't think that there's any
people, I think people of color were, in that I religion. Mean, historically fairly fearful of the Mormons, at least from reading some Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
I think they've always been persecuted, they would have you believe.
And then in sports news, I know you two are both big athlete fans.
Oh, man. Jocks. Bouncing men's ball, all those games.
Yeah, it's why we do a podcast about comic books. But this is actually pretty cool. So Archie Moore, who had been a light heavyweight champion for years and had a crazy long career, he had an unbeaten challenger by the name of Cassius Clay and fought him in Los Angeles. Cassius Clay had gotten a reputation for running his mouth, but also backing it up. He predicted he was going to win in four rounds, and he knocked Moore out in the fourth round.
And then of course, history never heard of Cassius Clay again.
No. Cassius Clay later changed his name to Muhammad Ali and fought Superman. So
yeah. Wow. Yeah. He didn't fight anyone in the Marvel universe, though.
I don't believe so, no.
Endorsements.
Yep.
That's a bummer.
So that's what's going on as these issues are hitting the stands. So why don't we go ahead and take a look at what we've got going on. And we will lead off with Fantastic Four number 10.
All right. I'll take us in because we have a little character returning named Doom. So it's the return of Dr. Doom. And on the cover, we even have a weird twist of actually meeting Lee and Kirby in the story. So they're just down in the corner looking at the action. And so really, really bizarre. But let's just run through these. We've got a lot of issues to get through this week. So Dr. Doom survived his apparent demise in number 6 when he was stranded on an asteroid just headed out into space. Seemed pretty much like he was not going to be seen again, but he's already back. What he did was he was rescued in space by a peaceful race called the Ovoids. The Ovoids had tremendous mental abilities and taught Doom how to transfer his mind into another body. They also gave him, you know, a number of other technological advances. Doom reappears in the Marvel Comics offices and threatens Lee and Kirby into bringing Reed to the office. So Reed has a relationship with he gets, you know, a call from Lee and says, come down. He thinks he's going to talk about the next issue that's coming out because apparently it's just the biographers are working on his story every month.
And as he's living his life, they are doing comic books about it. And this doesn't seem weird to read because he says that's funny. I was just there yesterday, but okay.
So it's more like, again, that idea of the real universe. And we can talk about that somewhere later, but it's Stan Lee and Kirby. Interestingly, how they're drawn, you don't see their faces ever.
Right.
They're always turned away or, you know, there's a hand over their face.
Also, Dr. Doom, when he threatens them, says, tell Mr. Fantastic to come here right away or your fate will be worse than this ashtray's. And he shoots his finger laser and destroys the ashtray. And that's his like threat to scare them, which I feel like he's capable of a lot more.
Yeah, I guess he's just really reining it in there.
Or maybe they're just trying to point out that they smoke.
Just to be cool. Doom, Reed goes there. Doom knocks him out with gas and smuggles him back to his lair. So Doom has Reed at his lair and he has ways to keep him trapped because he's Doom. He's thought about this. And then he mind swaps with him. So now we've got a classic. Reed's brain or mind is trapped in Doom's body. Doom is in Reed, so he's going to, you know, pull one over on the FF. So he calls the FF in, just as the FF arrive, he's swapped the mines. So with the FF's help, they seal Reed in Doom's body in an airtight cell. So he's like, we've got to trap the evil now. Reed is like, we've got to trap Doom. It just so happens they got the trap door with a plexiglass thing to keep Doom sealed up. And don't worry, there's plenty of air. Of course.
Everyone buys the story.
Yeah. Everyone's like, okay, cool. I'm glad you thought of this to somehow trap him this way in his own lair. So
it's like, wow, Reed, you really know a lot about Doom's lair. Yeah. This is totally
meanwhile,
plausible.
Doom is pleading a pretty decent case that or Reed trapped in Doom's body, but nobody believes him. And the thing is kind of a dick all the time.
Oh, all the time. Yeah.
He's very grumpy.
He's always grumpy. Unless he's hanging out with Alicia Masters, and then he's like passably not grumpy.
Oh, yeah. I think he's good. There's something going on there.
Yeah. Yeah. They're really hitting off. So once they've trapped Reed, Doom doesn't tell the rest of the FF that there really is only an hour's worth of air in this container. So he's leaving, planning on his old body, the Doom body with Reed's brain in it, dying in this jar.
Yes.
So the FF depart with Doom in Reed's body. Sue, Johnny, and Ben discover tiny zoo animals escaping from Reed's lab, of course. This is a little bit later. So the same zoo animals that went missing the day before. So they're like, what, did Reed steal a bunch of zoo animals and miniaturize them? Doom Reed tells them that he abducted the animals for testing purposes. And then he says he has a shrinking ray that he says will increase their powers, but he really plans to shrink them until they disappear. So the idea is he shrinks them and their powers are much greater in a tiny body. And somehow when they're brought back to normal size, their powers have been increased proportionally.
Yeah. And as an exhibit for his logic, he talks about, it's like, well, you know, dinosaurs used to rule the earth. But the problem was their bodies grew too large, but their brains remained the same. So they grew themselves out of existence.
It makes sense to me.
It's airtight. But
as airtight as where Reed is trapped.
Exactly. Just imagine, though, what if they had been smaller? See, if their bodies had been a fraction of their natural size, then their brains would have been much larger by comparison. And today, dinosaurs might still be the rulers of the earth. And this is illustrated with
Killer Jack Kirby art.
Awesome. of bipedal, like human-sized dinosaurs in spacesuits colonizing another planet.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yep.
Just one of Kirby's like tiny panels too. That
the art. So much. Yeah. These are very fun to read. The art is the best. Hands down, the best thing about most of these comics.
The art never lets you down. The story sometimes has some big holes, and I can just see Kirby like, I don't know, it's in the script, I'm gonna draw it, whatever, next.
Yeah,
I got 400 of these. That's to do question. Yeah.
This was the best, I think, the most competent, best story of all of them. It had a beginning and a middle and an end.
Yep.
Which I was impressed by. Which I often like modern comics too, just like they're big arcs like modern TV, and so you don't get a wrap up in one issue.
Right.
And so I was pleased. There's a lot of plot they driving through on this one.
There are a lot of a lot of letters.
You
in
were just running the
comments.
Synopsis, and I'm not sure the listeners are going to understand what the is going on in this comic right now. So
to wrap up the synopsis, that you still won't know what's going on. So Reed in Doom's body frees himself. And goes to Alicia's apartment to try and persuade her about what happened. So blind Alicia Masters, she senses something, you know, maybe more good inside of this Doom, and he may not be lying. But right then, Sue is there, who's come over, and she knocks out Reed in Doom's body, and Ben and Johnny arrive, but Ben can't quite bring himself to smash Doom.
Yeah, he really wants to.
It's just something stops him. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Feelings, it looks like.
Yeah.
What's wrong with me? Why did I stop? Why can't I smash you? He says out loud. It's as though something inside of me is holding me back. And he's drawn. He's pretty perplexed.
Yeah. He does not understand why he can't smash right now.
You feel bad for him.
So then they return to the Baxter building where Ben and Johnny start thinking something might be wrong. Johnny creates an illusion of dynamite. Reed in Doom's body tries to sacrifice himself to protect the others. Doom in Reed's body tries to escape up like a pipe.
Chimney or something?
Yeah. So they instantly see the altruism. They believe that this mind swap has happened. So the jig is up. Doom is so shocked that he loses his mental control, and Reed and Doom go back to their correct bodies. Doom tries to fight his way out, but accidentally activates the reducing ray and shrinks himself to nothingness.
Yeah.
So Doom went from asteroid just fired into the space with no chance of hitting anything to shrinking himself to microverse levels. Yeah.
He's a pretty obnoxious dude in this, because he meets these space aliens who are benevolent and have like godlike powers, and they're willing to share it with him.
Yeah.
And all he wants to do is go back to Earth to fuck up the planet. It's like, and he doesn't even, I'm not even sure what his motivations are, just to do bad stuff to people.
Yeah. He wants to destroy the Fantastic Four.
I feel like also they could have given him the power to fix his disgusting face, because earlier in the comic, he takes his mask off.
Oh, yeah.
And the writers are like, oh, don't take your mask off. It's so gross. And he says, I do not blame you for shrinking from the sight of me. I still cannot bear to gaze upon myself. And then he's looking in the mirror and you see him just, he wants to throw up or something. So I feel like if I were him, the first thing I would have done, and I'm not that vain, but I would have fixed my face so at least I could look at it in the mirror.
Yeah, yeah.
But that just shows you how committed Doom is to just destroying the Fantastic Four. He's like, yeah, nope, just teach me how to swap my brain with someone else and then get me back to Earth so I can go ahead and mess them up.
Oh,
he's nothing if not consistent.
Yeah.
Well, so that's probably it for Dr. Doom. We probably never see him again.
Nope, that's it.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. They defeat him so easily, so he's dead.
Cool. I feel like they did defeat somebody this time. Often in Fantastic Four comics, they just sort of, the bad guy gets away and they're like, we're still alive. We'll call it a win. And they move on. Yeah.
No, it appears he is definitely dead. I don't know a ton about this universe, but...
Yeah, we never hear from him again.
Yep.
There's a pinup page at the back too. Girl, sexy invisible lady.
There's a note about the detailed, like driving the panel for her section of the Fantastic Car too. There's a call out like Jack spent extra time drawing more knobs, buttons, and things on the panel. I love that. Panel. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Because that's really why he was drawing that.
He's a arousing specimen, totally invisible. My imagination runs wild.
Yeah, let's head over into Journey into Mystery number 88 and see what Thor is up to this month. As usual, Journey into Mystery, it's an anthology book, but the first and the main story is devoted to Thor, and we can see from the cover that Loki is back. We last saw him a few issues ago in issue number 85, this issue picks up right after the end of that last issue. Last time Thor and Loki met, Thor tied up Loki and stuck his hammer to him and whisked him to Asgard, and then the hammer goes back, and so that's where we pick up here at the start of this new issue. And so because of all of the trouble he was getting into on Earth, Loki winds up getting confined to Asgard by Odin. And while Loki is on Asgard, he spies on Thor with his magic, and he discovers that Thor has a secret identity, Lame Dr. Blake. And he also learns that if Thor lets go of his hammer for 60 seconds, he turns into Lame Dr. Blake, and this gives Loki an idea. So he transforms himself into a snake, and he sneaks past Heimdall, who's the guardian of the Rainbow Bridge, and winds up heading to Earth. Once Loki winds up on Earth, he disguises himself, and he goes to Lame Dr. Blake's office. He hypnotizes Nurse Jane Foster. And then he reveals himself to Blake, who turns into Thor and challenges Thor to meet him in Central Park in 1 hour.
One note here already. So Loki can turn himself into a snake.
Right.
But he still wears like a rubber mask, like a Scooby-Doo mask to disguise himself.
Right.
Yeah. Doesn't need that. He can turn himself into pretty much anything.
But I'll tell you, when I was a kid, anytime I saw a movie where a person peeled off of a rubber face off their normal face,
it was cool.
So he might have just done it because it's cool.
Also, maybe.
And like for the effect.
Yeah, I was going to say, like maybe he was just, you know, maybe taking a night class and doing like practical effect makeup.
Like I'm your stepbrother and I just tricked you, dummy, is basically what he's doing.
Yeah. Pretty much, pretty much. So they go to Central Park, as planned. But Loki had hypnotized, Jane Foster to show up, and then he transforms a tree into a tiger.
I just suspend that disbelief.
He's a god, you know, he can do stuff.
And he does it with precise timing so that Thor has to choose between saving Jane from the tiger or catching his hammer. So obviously he chooses to save Jane Foster. Takes him slightly over a minute to beat the tiger, which means he is turned back into lame Dr. Blake. And then Loki seals away Thor's hammer inside of a magical field. So Blake can't get to it. He can't turn back into Thor. This is a pretty elaborate plot. This is a little Rube Goldbergian.
Yeah, it is. Also, when he converts back to lame Dr. Blake, he's got that purple suit on. He actually loses his costume and his cool hat.
Yeah.
And then he's got a kind of a lame, well, you know, a decent hat, but a purple suit. I'm just trying to figure out like what is.
Maybe he and Bruce Banner shop at the same stores.
Does well, I don't want to jump ahead, but like I noticed the Hulk's pants didn't really burst apart when he turned into the Hulk, and we'll get to that. But
well, we were, at, you know, it was a miracle age of space age fibers.
So. Yeah, unstable molecules have already been invented Marvel universe. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, I did see that in the Fantastic Four book. They're making fun
of Reed's suit.
Yeah, Reed's suit that's all stretchy. So you're right. They already have this tech. And I'm glad. I mean, it's probably better he's not just naked or whatever.
That wouldn't get approved by the comics code. Mm-hmm. So Thor is he's been transformed into Blake, so he can't do anything to Loki. And Loki decides he's just going to run wild and mess with humanity. So he transforms into a pigeon and then he flies around town. He transforms humans on the street into blank beings, which is kind of a creepy visual. They're just like
cut out of the scene. So
it's nothings. It's really
turned into nothings. That's what some guy yells. It's pretty terrifying.
It feels really like 80s Doom Patrol comics. Yeah. Like it feels like something Grant Morrison would have written.
Most of what happens as Loki goes on his rampage feels like that.
Yeah, because then he winds up transforming buildings and cars into candy and ice cream. Yeah. In a little bit of unintentional heroism, he follows a Russian jet and he disables a bomb that they're dropping to test it. It just falls into the ocean and nothing happens, and they're all freaked out because they have to go back to Khrushchev and tell him that they failed. And then the army shows up to try to stop Loki, and he gives all their weapons wings and all their guns and bazookas fly away.
Oh, I love that a lot. It's so ridiculous.
And then but then Blake comes up with the solution to get the hammer back, and here's what it is. So Loki comes back to Central Park because he hears that Thor has vowed to defeat Loki before the end of the week. This is a front page headline in the local paper. So Loki gets back to Central Park and Thor is standing there holding his hammer. And Loki's like, what? How can you possibly have your hammer? The field is still there. So Loki turns off the force field to make sure that the hammer is still there. And the hammer is still there. And then Dr. Blake runs out from behind Thor because Thor was just a plastic dummy.
A very convincing plastic.
Where
his own brother was convinced it was him from, I'd say, less than 20 feet away, it looks like.
Yeah.
Also,
it's a lot of manufacturing.
I think if a dummy was talking to you, just a you know, department store mannequin with whatever that suit is and a fake hammer. And its mouth isn't moving.
Yeah.
But you're just, and you can hear a guy talking behind it. And you're just like, what?
Yeah. But the trickster gets tricked. Blake grabs the hammer, turns back into Thor. Loki tries to make a run for it again as a pigeon.
Yeah.
It's just one of his things.
Thor kind of foils it. He turns into a pigeon and hides amongst the other pigeons.
Right.
And then Thor knows that they have a certain taste for peanuts. And he buys a bag, it looks like, from this peanut vendor. Because the vendor doesn't look mad, so he doesn't steal them.
Right.
Yeah, he had some change in his suit.
He buys some peanuts and he throws them on the ground. And that... I guess Loki doesn't like peanuts or has a peanut allergy or something. And he's like, blast it, Thor tricked me. So,
tricked the trickster.
Yeah, again.
Double cross.
And so now Thor knows which one is Loki. He steals a tennis net.
From some dudes playing tennis.
Yeah.
And he apologizes, though. Yep. So.
Sorry, gentlemen.
And he captures Pigeon Loki and then hauls him back to Asgard, and all the Asgardian gods are impressed with Thor's latest feat. That's pretty much it. They say that they'll try to keep an eye on him, but, yeah, you know, honestly, they're 0 for 2 so far.
This is one where, I'm not convinced that he's not going to get away again. He's tricky. And also, the dad seems kind of like a pushover. You know, he's like, he can't reprimand his kids. That's why it's such a spoiled little...
Rob, you want to take us through Strange Tales?
Oh, yes.
The debut of a fantastic new villain.
Yes.
Yes. That's the best part of this comic.
I love this. Okay. On the cover, we see Human Torch battles the most fantastic foe of all. Questionable. Paste Pot Pete and his unbeatable super weapon. So... yeah, if you remember Paste Pot Pete, he looks like he's got like a...
Are you saying if you remember him from this comic?
If you remember if you remember Paste Pot Pete from the history of Marvel, but he looks like a Rembrandt with a glue gun.
He's wearing an enormous purple beret.
Yeah, and a blue, or it varies, but like a green cloak. Yeah.
And like a baggy camo colored clown costume.
Or a painter's suit almost.
I don't know, is he supposed to just look like a painter? I guess like to
It looks like he's got like just an industrial like spray gun, and then he carries around a pot of paste,
a bucket with a lid on it and a tube coming out the side of it.
Is this the only... I've never heard of Paste Pot Pete before I saw him. I love him. He's probably my favorite villain, him and that beetle, of all the ones I read for this.
He does continue in the Marvel universe.
He does.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll talk about it some more, but he is a character, a C-list villain. So let me run through this really fast.
Because there's not a lot of story.
Yeah, the plot is easy. The Human Torch fights Paste Pot Pete. Paste Pot Pete robs a bank while Johnny Storm is inside. Johnny, remember in Strange Tales, Johnny's always worried about his secret identity.
Oh, yeah.
He's very preoccupied.
The very first panel in this just cracked me up. The first shot we see of Johnny Storm in the bank, he's thinking to himself, I have to be more careful. I absentmindedly almost wrote Human Torch on the deposit slip.
I don't like him. As a person, I think that he sucks. And as a hero, I think he sucks, too. Yeah.
So I'll get through these plot points pretty quick. Paste Pot Pete successfully robs a bank, makes his getaway. The torch sends out a fake torch to follow him. So he creates one of his sort of torch doppelgangers that can't do a lot but look like him. That distracts people enough that he can actually turn into the torch, follow him. So he's following his own doppelganger that just keeps following Paste Pot Pete. It's smart enough to do that. Paste Pot Pete breaks into an army missile base where he plans to steal an experimental rocket.
Yeah, and like this guy is just—he just keeps rolling the dice. Like he's had a successful bank robbery.
Yeah,
he's escaped from the Human Torch. He's like, now I'm going to steal a rocket
from the federal government. Yeah. I assume this is or some.
And he has like paste galore. He's got like a giant paste gun to help him catch this rocket.
I mean, he had enough paste to glue up a missile.
Yeah,
and
so
steal it.
And freeze it in the air with paste. So
physics be damned.
So Pete sticks the torch to a missile, which he narrowly escapes from before it explodes over the ocean. So he's basically glued to a missile he can't flame on because he'll blow the missile up. So he's got to use some delicate work to get himself free. Torch stops the truck, recovers the missile and the bank robbery loot. But Pete gets away by sticking himself to a passing plane. So there's nothing paste can't do. You know, just think about it, kids.
Yeah.
Eat your paste.
It's ridiculous. It's magical stuff. It's like, it's basically Spider-Man's web, except it just looks so much grosser.
It's questionable. Also, he's an incredible driver. After he steals the nuclear warhead and throws it in the back of a semi-truck, Torch throwing flaming spears, essentially, like fireballs at the truck. And the truck's just swerving left and right and dodging all the missiles that's being fired at it. So he's, he has some redeeming qualities as a villain. His choice, I feel like he could do a lot better than paste. I don't even, they don't really explain anything about the paste. It's,
I know, he's really proud of it too. He mentions the paste every time he uses it.
Yeah, paste is his thing. But he does get away at the end of the issue. Because after he sticks himself to the passing passenger jet, he drops off and into the ocean and gets picked up by a boat that he'd previously planned to rendezvous with.
He commissioned this guy to pick him up.
Right.
And as all good villains do, the guy says to him, you hired me to meet you here, get you out of the country in case something went wrong, but I never guessed that you'd arrive this way. And then he says, to the guy saving his life, neither did I, you fool, which is like a classic villain thing to just belittle the dude who's saving your ass.
And he gets away. So,
scot-free.
Yeah.
But I feel like the torch, he's just, what we left out, isn't this one, he runs out of his power.
Oh, yeah.
More than once.
Oh, yeah. He does it all the time, but it's always like.
That is actually
inconvenient.
Pretty infuriating. Yeah. It makes me think a lot less of him.
Yeah.
It's barely a power at that point. If you can't control it or like you just run out of it. And he's not even. I feel like some superheroes might run out of like they have to muster up everything they have. But they sort of know their limit and they're like, I'm going to run out of power. He just like runs out of gas. He has no meter. He's just crud. Like, yeah.
He seems always surprised when it happens. Yeah. He's like, oh, no.
And he's usually flying. He's like, I'm like in the Fantastic Four. Yeah. Reed has to catch him often because he's like, I was flying and I ran out of gas and now I'm falling out of the sky.
Yep.
Yeah, he's not a smart kid.
Nope. Pete gets away. And he does show up again. He shows up time and time again. Like he first of all, pretty quickly changes his name. He becomes the Trapster.
Okay. That's actually a cooler name.
That's a better name.
And he doesn't just use paste once he's the Trapster. It's just about like traps.
Tricks and traps and stuff. Yeah.
So,
The paste is kind of a one trick pony.
Yes.
And like paste gross. Pot, Pete, it just sounds nasty. It sounds like a sex move.
But even to this day, like I read a comic that's probably 6 months old and somebody's like meets the Trapster and says, weren't you called Paste Pot Pete? And they all make fun of him. Yeah.
That's good.
So yeah.
He realizes later in life, the blunder years or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You look back, you don't like what you
see. He was just so enthusiastic about paste. It, you know,
yeah,
what can
he must've just had like a lot of it is what I assume. I like also in this one last thing is Human Torch completely melts the semi finally, and they show it. It's like the tires and the hood of it are all melted together. But then they later recover all the cash.
Right, he didn't burn the cash from under the seat,
but it's from under the from under the seat of the truck
that's completely melted.
Yeah,
so, yeah, I don't.
He just good briefcase. Just lucky.
Yep,
he's just a lucky guy.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good.
All right, Brian, you want to take us through Tales to Astonish? Okay, I know that Noah loves this one.
Well, I really enjoyed this. This isn't the first one I read, and I really...
Well, I mean, looking at that cover, how could this not be the very first one?
Yeah, well, that's... I always choose a book. My old roommate used to accuse me of only reading books that had a skull on the cover. And I try to defend myself, and then I looked at all my books, and I didn't protest.
Yeah, and this one, I mean, there's no skull in here, but it's got like a million bugs.
But it's got a cool cover.
Yeah.
And that's what matters.
Million bugs plus Ant-Man, which is not all that cool, but it's got Scarlet Beetle, who is on the cover. He's like 50 feet tall, Scarlet, standing on his hind legs, and has like eyes with little eyeballs in them.
And he looks pretty pissed.
He's like, he basically has googly eyes, you know, like the little craft glue on eyes.
Yep. And he promises right here on the cover of Tales to Astonish 39, "At last you've met your match, Ant-Man. Even you can't stop the hordes of the Scarlet Beetle."
Yeah. I'm not even sure the Ant-Man hears him, too, because he's in a fist fight with a what looks like a wasp.
On a drinking fountain.
Yeah.
in force perspective.
They might have been lost on him, but it does look menacing.
Yes. All right, so jumping into it. Starts out with Ant-Man getting a warning from his ants. No, I should back up. Ant-Man has computers that allow him to monitor signals that he receives from his ants, who are partners in his war against crime. And there's something brewing, something strange and dangerous. And they are the ant waves are full of them. So he turns into Ant-Man, fires himself out of his little ant catapult into a pile of ants as that's the way he gets around town.
Talked about this last time.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, Rob and I talked about this a few days ago. Like, I feel like he could have just walked downtown instead of like
in normal human size
and probably got there faster. I don't know.
Yeah. Or like ride a bike, man.
And then he jumps on this ant and says, "Take me to the scene of the trouble."
Yep.
which everyone knows how fast ants move.
Oh, yeah.
They can just cruise across town.
And they rarely get distracted by, you know, anything sugary.
Yeah. Just like a piece of gum or something. But
so they wind up, they go into the sewers where the Scarlet Beetle is holding court. He's riling up all sorts of assorted insects. And Ant-Man figures out that he's got some mental powers that have been given to him by radiation, because that's what radiation does.
He was accidentally hit during one of mankind's atomic experiment. So that's how he got all this.
So we kind of had it coming.
And it made him as a brain equal that of a human.
Yes.
Of any human.
Any.
Yeah.
Literally any human.
Possibly the best human.
Or possibly just Ant-Man. Mm-hmm. So the Scarlet Beetle winds up sending his bugs against Ant-Man. There's a fight. Ant-Man gets knocked out. Scarlet Beetle steals Ant-Man's growing and shrinking gas, traps him down a hole without his cybernetic helmet. And then the Scarlet Beetle uses the growth gas on himself and becomes gigantic and begins his insect-based war against mankind. So he uses termites to knock out electrical poles. He uses spiders and all sorts of other bugs to steal crates of dynamite from an armory. He has spiders biting public officials and making them ill and confining them to bed. It's just this terrible, terrible crime.
And also, it should be noted that the giant Scarlet Beetle is not bigger than a car.
He's like
the size of a man.
He's like,
he's the size of a man.
So he's a giant beetle.
He announces everything that he's doing out loud. Behold how the growth gas enlarges me. I am becoming as big as a human.
So he's not, when we say, you know, usually when you're talking about Kirby, you get the idea. The cover's doing a weird perspective thing when you realize that he's standing over lines of beetles that are normal sized and he's about man sized.
Right.
But they have the, you know, in the background, you can see the city. So you can think maybe we're talking about a full building sized beetle, but no, it's just a man sized.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Just your average man sized beetle.
I felt like that needed to be stated.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I really did enjoy that he sicked all these bees on the cops, which I started rooting for him at that point. It actually, he trashes a news station. That way they can't get the news out about the beetle hordes and stuff.
Yep.
And then he just fucks these cops up. And I really enjoyed that bit.
And where's Ant-Man in all this? Well, he's still stuck in this hole.
Yeah, he's stuck in a hole.
And I'm assuming at this point he's across town.
Probably.
I want to just establish that.
He
came out of the sewers and he went downtown and started just trashing the downtown area.
And Ant-Man is like, I don't have my helmet. How am I ever going to get out of here? But even though he's not wearing the helmet, it's still transmitting signals. So his noble and faithful ants follow the signal. They discover him down in the hole. They get him out of there. Ant-Man gets the helmet back, and now he's ready to lead the ant resistance against the Scarlet Beetle's hordes.
And again, he's tiny, the size of an ant, and gets on a freaking ant, and it's like, let's head downtown on the back of an ant. I mean, I know it's probably really cool to ride on an ant's back.
Sure, yeah.
I just feel like there's got to be a better way. Like, even in the movie... You know,
he could get on a flying ant.
Yeah, anything. But he's just like riding an ant downtown.
Or like get on an ant and then get on a car with like, the ant.
In this room, he can see the beetle. But I feel like it'd still take him like 40 minutes to get over to the beetle.
Yeah.
And then also he says, I'll take this ice cream pop stick. It may come in handy, which obviously it's going to, but that's like the worst foreshadowing I think I've ever seen.
He's often picking up just random bits of garbage that instantly save him. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like an adventure game. You can only pick up things that will wind up being useful to your quest later on down the road.
And it gets to pretty much the best part here. The way he defeats all the insects.
Oh, yeah.
I found very delightful.
Yep.
Where he has the ants themselves steal a load of DDT and just spray it on all the insects and kills all the insects.
Yep.
And he's a hero. He's a scientist. The miracle chemical of DDT saves the day.
And there's no way that the ants didn't get the DDT.
Well, I told my wife, she said, what are you reading? Because she heard me laughing. And I said, I'm reading this Ant-Man comic. And then I think she regretted asking me what I was doing. And then I told her the plot. And I said, and then this guy saves the day by getting his ants to steal his DDT and sprays it all over these insects. And she's like, wouldn't it kill the ants? And I was like, no, you idiot. So, yeah, she looked like a real dummy.
Oh, man. All right. So with the insects defeated, Ant-Man leads the beetle into a toy store where they actually have like a pretty awesome fight. And then Ant-Man, he grabs a lance from a toy knight. And he hurls it like a javelin and
this
punctures.
Is back when toys could actually hurt a kid. Oh, so yeah, I believe this part, too. It's probably a die-cast lance, and it probably was spring-loaded or something.
That lance has probably taken out dozens of kid eyes prior to this point.
So I was like, I buy that.
Yeah. Yep. He punctures the reducing gas canister on the Scarlet Beetle's back, and the gas starts leaking out. The Scarlet Beetle shrinks back down to regular beetle size. Ant-Man stuffs him in a deflated balloon and then takes him back to his lab. There's two ways you could handle a beetle-sized villain if you are a human-sized person. I mean, you could just step on it.
Right, yeah, squash it.
I feel like at this point, that's what you should do. While it has human intelligence,
right,
just, you know, torture the hell out of it. Like, you know, mental and physical Guantanamo-type torture, and then just squish him. He killed, I don't even know how many insects. It was like a glorious day when he killed all the insects in Manhattan or whatever this is. But then he saves the one evil one that mind controlling all the other ones. And he like, this guy gets a reprieve. He like heals him of his ailment of super intelligence and super evil. And then just releases him into the wild.
So he can live out his natural life.
With no guilt of all, like, the tens of thousands, millions of insects that he killed with DDT.
Not at all.
And bird, you know some birds died. Yep. And, you know, so, like, fuck you, Ant-Man.
And that's Ant-Man's adventure.
I really like that comic. It's terribly written and very funny. And the art was awesome. I will say, like, the writing is so bad in this. Like extraordinarily bad, and I heard you guys didn't have a lot of nice things to say about Larry Lieber. I'm sure he's a cool dude.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, even if I wrote this comic and it was this bad, I'd be like, yeah, I wrote it. you know, I'm not going to be ashamed of it. It's a long time ago. There was nothing to compare.
Also, Larry wrote a lot of pages every month.
He's cranking it out.
Yeah.
It's like a quantity thing. Yeah. I just wonder how much of the cool shit was Stan Lee's, because it says plot by Stan Lee.
Right.
And the plot's pretty cool. And the stuff that happens, it talks about, like, right off the bat, his cybernetic helmet's on the ground. And I thought, that's one where I listened to your first episode, and I thought about that, looking through it through the lens of somebody in the 60s, not me today, with all the pop culture I have at my fingertips. A cybernetic helmet in and of itself is badass.
Super cool.
Like that alone. Yeah. He's wearing a ridiculously stupid looking helmet in the very, what is that? The second.
That's just his home receiver.
Yeah, he's like inspecting a gigantic waveform with what looks like a jeweler's loop on the end of a... I don't know. It looks high tech.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's just, and all it tells him though is that something must be brewing in the insect world. It's not the most accurate tools. But yeah, that was a good one. Short and sweet. And DDT is the true hero of this story.
Yep.
And of the time.
You got one left.
Well, yeah, we got to get through this The Incredible Hulk. Yes. The Incredible Hulk number 5. So I'll take at least the first story, Brian, anybody chime in when you want. So we have two stories in this, and I think I would say these are the strongest Hulk stories we've had yet. Stan's put some time in this and then has Larry just churning out pages on other stuff, Ant-Man stories. So on the cover, we see more powerful, more dangerous, more uncontrollable than ever before. Here comes the Hulk. And we have this really like Spartacus looking gladiator guy who we learn is named Tyrannus or Tyrannus. I don't know how he Tyrannus. Likes to pronounce it. So we're introduced to Tyrannus. This story is called Beauty and the Beast. And Miss Betty Ross plays a big role in this.
The beauty. I thought Tyrannus was.
But he's also very beautiful.
He's a sexy little. If he was like a little less muscular, he would be a babe.
He shows a lot of leg too.
A lot of leg. I mean, like there's almost scrotum. On a hot day, you'd see a scrotum.
He's got sort of a toga-esque thing going on. So we start the story. We have General Thunderbolt Ross. Showing films of how they can't defeat the Hulk and how strong the Hulk is. And then he tasks Bruce Banner with figuring out how to stop the Hulk, which is fairly hilarious since he's the Hulk. Then we go to Tyrannus under the surface of the Earth, having waited centuries thanks to his Fountain of Youth to attack. He was banished to the center of the earth by Merlin the Magician himself, but he found a race of creatures who would become his slaves, and now he's ready to lead his army to conquer
really
the earth.
He lords over these slaves, too. He talks a lot of about them in front of them.
Yeah.
But that, I guess, is what you do.
If your name's Tyrannus.
He says it out loud right here. He's like, I found a race of creatures here, obedient slaves who would do my bidding. And they're real small guys. But he's just saying that right in front of them.
Yeah, they're just like guys with big heads and diapers.
But they've got like advanced technology because they've been building these war weapons underground.
So. Yeah, mightiest weapons ever dreamed of.
So now, also Tyrannus can see the surface world and possibly read the thoughts of the people on the surface world.
Yeah.
They don't really mention that, but he does like kind of, he knows that Betty likes Bruce.
Yeah, I think you can just read her I mean, they show what she looks like. She's either terrified or in love.
So he just surmised. Being like, a guy who lives underground with just a bunch of
hasn't seen a woman in 300 years, or like 1,000 years, he still can see the longing in her eyes.
So Tyrannus disguises himself as an archaeologist and asks Betty to show him some local caves. Rick and Bruce gets suspicious. He's like, what kind of archaeologist doesn't know the local caves?
Also, that's a secret identity comes up with, right? And this fake name he comes up with is Mr. Tyrannus.
He had the whole archaeologist idea, and they're like, well, what's your name? He's like,
they caught him off guard.
Yeah, Tyrannus.
Where do you live?
Well, he hasn't had to lie to anyone in 1,000 years either, so he's probably a little slow.
He's rusty.
Yeah.
Mr. Tyrannus. That,
please, my father was Mr. Tyrannus. Yeah. You can kill me, Jill. Call me.
Rick and Bruce are suspicious. They follow Mr. Tyrannus and Betty. And Banner turns himself into the Hulk when the pair hits a dead end. What they have to do is actually go back to the lab, shoot him with the ray to turn him into the Hulk, because that's how he becomes the Hulk nowadays in this current form.
Right.
So the Hulk gets the boulder out of the way. Tyrannus warns Ross not to resist him, or Betty will pay the price. So Tyrannus basically beams up to Thunderbolt Ross that he's got his daughter and... Mm-hmm. He's got to do what he says, because Tyrannus is trying to sort of neuter the nuclear capabilities of the
US. It's the only thing he's afraid of. Yeah. Yep.
So Tyrannus gasses the Hulk when he attacks him underground and turns him into a gladiator. It totally looks like, yeah.
It's Ragnarok. Like a Thor Ragnarok. Yeah. Except he fights a robot in this.
Right.
And he makes the Hulk do insane things, like the labors of Hercules.
I like how he has an asbestos shield. He mentioned that. He's like, why did they give me a fireproof shield? Doesn't he say something about it?
Yeah, made and then out he of asbestos? Gets fire breathed at him.
So DDT and asbestos, the two, like, the pinnacle of the technology
miracle,
at the time. Yeah,
miracle chemicals.
And I shouldn't say breathe. When a robot shoots fire at you, it's not breathing fire. Just like for all you kids taking notes. Yeah.
Right.
So he defeats this robot. He does a bunch of other crazy things. After the fight, Rick rescues Betty while disguised as one of Tyrannus' soldiers, which frees the Hulk from he's basically being subservient because Betty's being held hostage. So we also see the Hulk caring about Betty so much that he's doing all of these crazy things just to keep her safe.
Yes.
The Hulk also smashes Tyrannus' lair by pushing apart a pair of pillars, Samson style. So we have like all these references to Hercules and Samson and other like sort of Old Testament feats.
Yeah.
They've painted this huge mythological picture for him. And then Rick, Hulk, and Betty escape. So they get away. Tyrannus is just trapped in his underground lair. The Hulk actually did act as a hero for although I think he wraps up by saying that about Betty, let her fear me, let them all fear me, maybe they got good reason too, because they're only humans, but I'm the Hulk. So he's still not the nicest guy.
Yeah
but he's pretty down to earth for compared to modern day Hulk.
Yeah. And this is a pretty smart Hulk, too.
Yeah, he's like, he can string a sentence together. I did like in the beginning of this, they tried to capture him with a...
The giant magnet thing?
Yeah, like a neuron magnet designed to attract and hold living beings. And he just f***ed it up completely. It didn't work. And then they show him tipping a building over from its foundation, a multi-story. It looks like an apartment complex, possibly, so that's not very cool. But he also, they fire a warhead at him, and he just catches it in his hands, and it blows up, and it doesn't do shit to him, which is pretty cool, and that's pretty Hulkish.
Yeah.
We had Hulk, like, catch a grenade in one hand in a recent issue and just let it blow up,
just
to show them that they can't hurt him. So that was a full story. That is half of the Hulk
this
comic.
This is your 12 cents worth, I'll say. I don't know if you guys have been talking about the price of these things, but 12 cents. I was trying to figure out what a comic now is like. I feel like shorter than this.
Yeah.
And $3.50.
Something like $3, $4. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you guys got to crunch the numbers on that and figure out if comics are more expensive or the same price.
These were a bargain. They were still loss leaders in the most part for advertising. Mm-hmm. So the cost of the comic was
12 cents seems like a good deal, but I don't know. Like, doesn't everything cost 12 cents back then? It's like,
in the 60s, you could buy a brand new car.
You buy a house for $8,000. sometimes like 12 cents seems expensive when you see the other things you could get for 12 cents.
Right. Yeah. But
anyway,
well, if you didn't think that the first story was worth 12 cents, maybe the second story will convince you that it pushes it over the top. So, this one's called The Hordes of General Fang, and it's gently racist 1960s comic book stories. Like, nothing super explicit. No slurs that I saw, and no, like, really crazy over-the-top stereotypes. But, you know, we had just come out of the Korean War.
This takes place mostly in China.
Takes place mostly in China. Yep. Yeah, we're about to head into Vietnam. So America doesn't have tender feelings toward that region of the world right now.
Yeah, I was surprised. I mean, again, don't condone or enjoy any of that kind of talk. But I expect, after just the amount of commie talk.
Yeah.
I expect that there will be some, even how, you know, Invisible Girl is treated. I expect these reflections of the time to occur, but I didn't see much. I did see one thing in this, and I'll tell you about it later.
Oh yeah. So anyway, let's go through this. So the story begins with General Ross finally getting to use the iceberg rocket that he was testing in a previous issue. So he sees Hulk jumping through the air. He fires this rocket off. It surrounds Hulk with a cloud of freezing gas, and he plummets to the ground in this big block of ice. But surprise, it doesn't actually stop the Hulk, because nothing stops the Hulk. It really just, like, General Ross and the Hulk have this real Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner relationship. So Hulk makes good his escape. He turns back into Bruce Banner. He winds up having a conversation with Rick Jones. Meanwhile, on the other side of the world, the warlord General Fang invades peaceful Lhasa. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's a city in Tibet, basically. General Fang is really bad news. This is a very, you know, peaceful society, he's just marching his army in there and enslaving the populace and just, you know, doing all sorts of terrible things. Banner hears about this back in the United States over a radio broadcast, decides that he's going to do something about it, turns himself into the Hulk, and then he and Rick book themselves a flight to China with the Hulk, like, fully hulked out and, like, wrapped up in a large overcoat and scarf and hat.
Looks like he's in a center seat, too.
Oh, yeah, he put those pants on after he...
Why they didn't rip.
Why is he wearing pants? It already established that he gets boiling hot. That's why that ice bomb didn't work, because it melted the ice, because when he's the Hulk, he's so hot. I feel like pants would be horrible. You
know? Well, I feel like being in an airplane would not be too pleasant either.
I believe the Hulk might really throw off the weight ratio of a plane. Like, yes. Yeah. Again, I'm not a small person, but I don't weigh more than a ton.
He calls the stewardess a lame brain.
I was gonna say, they're not on the plane for very long, because he throws a tantrum with a stewardess.
He also, at altitude, they open the emergency exit and just jump out of the plane, just like, "F you guys," and they don't show what happened to the plane, but I'm assuming nothing good. Like, the stewardess at the very least was sucked out that door. They're 7 miles up. And Hulk's like, "I'm just going to open the hatch here and jump out with what's-his-face on my back," who he treats like absolute trash.
Rick only sticks around because he saved his life and because he's not that bright.
I feel like just a couple interactions with the Hulk, I'm like, "All right, you dude." Like, he says, "Hulk, you're still only one guy." Like, he's worried about the Hulk. You know, how are you going to take on an army? And he's like, "Shut up, you puny fool. Stay out of my way. Stay out of my hair while I look for something."
That's the Hulk. He's a nice guy.
Yep.
Yeah, he's a real butthole.
So lands on the island of Formosa, sees some troops there, and of course, because he's the Hulk and they're soldiers, they immediately start shooting at him, but he tosses them out of the way and leaps out of there and gets himself to Tibet. And Hulk has a plan. So before he took off, he got in this book of mythology. So the Hulk not only can talk really good, he can read.
Yeah, this Hulk is Banner front.
Not only that, but I'm assuming he's like a seamstress or whatever, because we're getting
Has he whipped up this Hulk sized costume?
He's gonna disguise himself as an abominable snowman.
And I assume he turned into the Hulk previously, took measurements of his own body, went back to Bruce Banner, sewed himself a fancy,
or he went to the same person that made the Thor, you know, mannequin
you know,
that's
to scale.
True. There's somebody and, just in the town that's yeah, like, yeah,
in
I
the
can
city.
Make it.
Yeah,
of course
they just
I can.
Do whatever.
I work on Broadway.
Yeah. So Hulk's whole plan is because this is local mythology that when Fang's soldiers see an abominable snowman, they're going to freak out and they're going to run terrified, and that's going to give Hulk the advantage. And it works in the short term, but it turns out that Fang's troops are more scared of Fang than they are of an abominable snowman. And General Fang uses a projector to project an image of a dragon under the side of the mountain. Hulk leaps through it to attack it and winds up landing in an electrified cage.
Classic.
So now it looks like, you know, basically Fang is free to move forward with the conquest. But Rick Jones sabotages the cage, blows it up. Hulk escapes, and he goes and leaps into the air and grabs a bunch of missiles, and then turns around and starts throwing them at General Fang's troops and scatters them everywhere. And then Hulk just goes nuts on these guys. He bends back a bunch of trees so that he can cause a gale force wind to blow all of the parachuting soldiers all over the place.
I'm not sure about the physics on that one, but I'm just gonna...
You gotta roll with that.
Yeah, I buy it. Seems legit.
And then as General Fang is trying to escape, Hulk builds up a whole bunch of pressure in a geyser and launches Fang into the air, where he grabs him, leaps back to the island of Formosa, and drops Fang off there, where the soldiers that Hulk fought earlier, who are no friends of Fang's, are going to wind up catching him and bringing him to justice. So once again, the Hulk did a kind of heroic thing.
Yeah.
He saw some people being oppressed, and he decided that he was going to intervene and save everybody in his own way. But then...
acts like a jerk at the last second.
Yeah. Rick says, "Whew, we're safe at last." And Hulk says, "Don't kid yourself. Nobody's safe." "What do you mean, Hulk?" "I mean that you and the rest of the weakling human race will be safe when there ain't no more Hulk. And I'm planning on being around for a long, long time."
I like his signs off every time, like, "I was a hero, but check out how much of a jerk I am."
So let's just kind of do a quick recap. So there's a lot of stuff that happened in these, but what are the things that are actually going to carry forward and actually influence the Marvel Universe? So... what do you got, Rob?
We have, weirdly, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby appearing in the Marvel comics. So, again, cementing that this is the not only the real universe, but Marvel comics coexist alongside the superheroes they create. And we've seen Johnny, like, reading the Hulk comic before. So this self-referential thing. But it's another part where Stan is really... establishing that personal connection. So he exists, that he's a real person, and that they're there to write these stories. So it's pretty cool.
It's weird. It's not like it's breaking the fourth wall, because they don't talk to the reader, but it's like there is a version of Marvel Comics in the Marvel universe.
Yeah.
So it's like it gets really like recursive and meta. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a tiny bit confusing.
Yeah.
Like they're biographers or
like they don't actually come up with the ideas. They
call
Reed
like,
Richards
when are we
over.
Write? And Dr. Doom shows up and they're like, "Oh, thank God. Like, tell us some stuff.
Just don't make us look at your face, but tell us whatever you want."
Yep. Yep.
I did like one more thing about this comic. I just the way like a guy will two goons and knock their heads together.
Oh, yeah.
He grabs two MiGs, fighter jets, and just smashes their noses into each other. And of course, the pilots parachute to safety. Which I'm assuming is for the kids.
Yeah. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. I don't, you know, there's not like gore, but they don't like go into making sure everyone's...
It's weird. Okay. The people who live and die in these comics, it's just like real life.
Yep.
It doesn't make any sense.
What else, Brian? What else mattered this month?
Well, we saw Ben Grimm, the Thing, hanging out with Alicia Masters. So they are like officially an item.
I think Johnny said your girlfriend.
Yeah. Yep. I think.
Yuck. wait, is she the blind one?
She's the blind one.
The puppet master's daughter or stepdaughter. Yeah.
It's always nice when a really gruesome dude hooks up with a blind chick.
their relationship goes on for a long, long, long time. And when he meets her and starts this relationship, this is like the beginning of him just being a full on hero, instead of like a grouchy, like sort of anti-hero like the Hulk is.
They're very similar. The Hulk and Thing are almost exactly the same person in these comics. They talk.
Yes. Yeah. The same. They like started saying Ba a lot, both of them.
And then I feel like Thing was wanting to smash more than Hulk. I didn't see the Hulk wanting to smash anything.
He had a very smashy issue.
Yeah. He really doesn't like Doom, though.
And so, then he was like, when he couldn't smash, because his feelings or whatever got in the way.
Yeah.
He was really seemed upset about that.
He's like emasculated.
We also have, we talk more about Sue being like, we get more information about Sue being conflicted about Reed and Namor. Remember, Sue is not Reed's wife at this point. She's still Susan Storm.
Yeah, because this goes back to at the beginning of the FF issue, they're all in Alicia's apartment and she has sculpted statuettes of all the Fantastic Four's villains. And Sue's like, why do you have Namor in there? He's not really a villain. And Reed's like, can we talk about this? Because I was always sort of under the impression that we had an understanding. And she's like, don't ask. I don't know. I don't know where I'm at right now. So, the love triangle is being more clearly defined. We also got a whole bunch of Thor and Loki and Asgard, which is awesome. It didn't introduce any new characters, but like Thor fighting commies doesn't do it for me.
And Loki did some ridiculously awesome things.
Yeah.
Like the turning people into nothings. And
turning all those, like a car into an ice cream sundae.
Yeah. Like that, to me, just paints the weird power of Loki. Like he's got this almost ultimate power and he uses it for just nonsense.
And he wasn't really, I mean, he was using it just for chaotic reasons, not really to, and they were, they talked about how it, if left unchecked, it would probably turn into mayhem and the slaughter of people. But they were pretty good pranks.
Yeah.
I like to, you know, you turn that guy's convertible again into like an ice cream sundae or whatever.
Yep.
And instead of like, I feel like if my car, granted I don't have a convertible, but if my car turned into an ice cream sundae, the part of me would be like, killer. And another part would just be like, amazed. But I don't think I'd be like, what that guy's doing. He's like, no, my convertible. Like, really? Look around you, dude. Like, that's your big problem?
The whole world just turned into Candyland. Yeah.
There's everything's made of taffy, and you're like bummed about your convertible.
Yeah.
That guy.
Oh, and also importantly this month, Paste Pot Pete.
Oh,
I got to say it again.
Paste Pot Pete is probably my favorite person. The Ant-Man was my favorite comic, but the Paste Pot Pete, I read tonight right before I came over here, and that was the best.
Yeah.
That guy sucks. And he's like awesome. Like he shoots for the moon, and also like just
it's the dumbest power, the dumbest guy.
Yeah, that his first he's gonna rob a bank, and then he's gonna steal a nuclear missile.
Yeah,
and then he's gonna sell it to a red country. That's what he describes. Just some commie country is that's the first thing he's gonna do is sell it to a communist nation.
Yeah. He's just swinging for the fences.
Yeah.
And but later, as we said, he becomes the Trapster. He's still part of the Marvel Universe. Yeah. He was part of the Frightful Four, which actually spring up soon, but they recur indefinitely. I mean, there's still some formation of a Frightful Four that happened to this day. Yeah.
Frightful Four. That's a cooler name than Fantastic Four. They're Fantasticar. I don't know about that. I was actually trying to think of a cooler name for their car, and then I kind of gave up. And I feel like they did too. One of them was like, "What do we call our car?" And one of them was like, "How about the Fantastic Car?" And they're like, "Groan," and then they couldn't come up with a better name.
Right.
And so there they are. At least the writer did that. But
it all works out. We had two other villains introduced this month. Also, we had the Scarlet Beetle, possibly the greatest Marvel villain of all
time. I'm assuming he truly does not ever return.
He actually does come back.
Now I'm actually even more pissed because they killed all those bugs. And then he like lets that. I just feel like I would just smush it. You know, so I even at my house, you know, like a spider.
So take spiders outside.
I don't do that. A spider's life is forfeit in my home. But I like sometimes I'll have second thoughts about squishing a bug. You know, I won't squish it outside. You know, I'm not a sociopath. But I just feel like after all that, I would have killed that beetle.
Right. Yeah.
And that's actually one of the most frustrating things about heroes in general. It's just like, yeah. just kill
every once in a while.
Bad guy. There's yeah. so many bad guys. You know, you could kill one of them.
Especially one that's now, or just a or beetle.
I did like, read a thing recently about, like, you can't be considered a hero if you kill people. And so, all right, fine. Batman's cool. So I changed
justice villains constantly change. Break out and cause the same problems they did before. Yeah, kill somebody he loves, you know,
I've
whatever.
Read Batman comics that I just have absolutely loved and been like furiously pissed off because he just won't just he's like the Joker has a biplane, you know, and he's gonna gas a big crowd because he thinks like it's there's a good chance Batman's in the crowd because everyone in the city's in this area right now, so I'll kill everyone in the city and I'll probably kill Batman. And Batman still, it's just like...
I feel like Batman should at least just use one of his special martial arts and paralyze his villain for life.
That's like a middle ground. That's like a...
okay, and last, Tyrannus. I keep wanting to say Tyrannus. Yeah. Tyrannus was introduced, and he continues too. So
he shows up a lot. He shows up as a Hulk villain and a Fantastic Four villain, and I think he fights the Avengers a few times too. So.
Yeah. Well, I like how also Bruce Banner sees through his. You know, he's like, I don't like him. Yeah. That's what he starts with, and it's like, why? And it's like, I don't like the way he looks. You know. And so I like that pettiness from Bruce Banner, and he's like a total prick in the later universe.
Yeah.
But I like how he just. It's like, I don't like his face, you know? So I really like that. And then he sees through his by saying, like, he has to take a girl to explore a cave. So it's kind of sexist, you know? It's like, this doesn't add up. He's, like, asking a woman, like, about archaeology stuff. And then it's like, and he doesn't even have any tools. But I'm always like, I mentioned this to Eric at work today about that specific little plot point.
What are the archaeologist's tools?
Yeah. And Eric was like, do archaeologists carry tools around wherever they go? Like,
as far as we know, a whip.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying. Right? He didn't look like Indiana Jones. But I did think that was pretty funny. It's like, yeah, he doesn't have any archaeology tools with him. It's like, I don't think that's what they do.
Okay, so if you have to boil this down, this whole month down to one panel that you're going to pick out that's going to be... your panel of the month. What are you going to go with?
Mine this month, just because it tickled my fancy so much, was the panel from Journey into Mystery 88, page 10, panel 5, just when Loki turns all the weapons, like the bazooka with wings on it, all their guns fly away with wings that he just made on them. And I was like, what is happening right now? And it made me giggle to my like out loud, which is rare. I normally just make sort of a wheezing noise. Snort. Yeah. And I was so amused. So I had to pick that. And it's just another thing that Kirby drew seems totally possible. Yeah. Like he can just make any crazy thing you think of like seem pretty real. You're like, okay, I'll go with this.
It's no crazier than anything else he's come up with.
How about you, Brian?
Well, I'm going to go with Fantastic Four 10, page 15, panel 7. Dinosaurs in spacesuits. It's an awesome picture. It's so good that it completely distracts you from how absolute nonsense the explanation for how Doom's shrinking and growing thing is going to.
I might side with you on that panel because I was loving that explanation. It's the most absurd thing. And I was trying to think of somebody being like, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That,
so the dinosaur's brain proportionally is,
So the idea is that the creatures get too big, but their brains don't get bigger with them. And therefore they just get so stupid they die.
So we're going to shrink you and grow you. And that's going to prevent that.
It didn't make any sense at all. And that was why I loved that little bit. It was absolute insanity.
Yes.
And then there's just a panel of these badass like velociraptors in spacesuits with like opposable thumbs. So like they did get that cool. I guess they lived long enough that they could space travel. But I want a comic of whatever's happening in that.
Seriously.
Yeah.
I want to read that badass. That alternate universe. Let's wrap it up with talking about how marvelous was the month. I don't have a clever rating system.
Oh, no rating system?
No, but you know what? Let's go with playing off of something Noah said earlier. So these are 12 cents a piece. Which ones do you think were worth the 12 cents? And which do you think left you wanting a little bit more?
Oh, well, just each issue, I would say easily, I'll just jump right in.
Yeah.
The Hulk worth, I would pay 24 cents in 1960s.
I would too, since you got two comics out of it.
And they're pretty dense comics. Yeah. And I would say Fantastic Four, we have Doom, we have everything we talked about,
yeah,
for sure. And granted, these are also pages too. I'm thinking of the value per page. Yeah. I would pay for Journey into Mystery just because anytime that Bifrost, the Rainbow Bridge, Loki shows up, Asgard, Odin's there on the
cover.
I'm a
sucker for all the Asgardian stuff, absolutely.
I feel like Strange Tales was a ripoff for my 12 cents.
Oh man, Strange Tales.
But we do have Paste Pot Pete.
Yeah, Paste Pot Pete almost brings it up to being worth 12
Paste
cents.
Paste Pot Pete, I say they're all worth 12 cents, all of them. Some are worth more than that. Paste Pot Pete is the only saving grace of that comic. Human Torch absolutely sucks. I don't know a lot about Human Torch. I was never a Fantastic Four fan, but man, he's a idiot. The fact that he's like ruminating to himself in the first panel about how he almost signed his name Human Torch on his check at the bank. It's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And also, how did you almost do that when the only thing you're preoccupied with is either running out of your special power or someone finding out about your secret identity? He sucks, and that sucked, and I don't know if he matures over time. I assume he doesn't go forever with not being able to...
He figures out a lot about his powers.
Yeah, and he stops having a secret identity. Like, this is just a brief period in his
time. All right, so this is his adolescence.
And also keep in mind, he's in the Fantastic Four comic.
Who are
they never talk, like, people know who all of them are.
He never carries the team or anything like that.
They're walking around, he's not on fire a lot of the time. Everyone, with the rest of them.
He's in the Fantastic Four.
In the Fantastic Four one, doesn't he do a similar thing where he figures out how to do a tiny little fire with his finger? Yeah. And it's like, okay, in two comics in that month, I figured out how to do I make a little fire. Like, great. That's cool. That's really cool.
But what about, I know you were really tickled by the Tales to Astonish, the Ant-Man story.
The Ant-Man story might have been my favorite. I mean, I laughed out loud. That was the first one I read. You gave me my homework to read these comics, and that was the first one I read. And I was like, I was laughing. It was absurd. It was cool. It was terribly written. I mean, like, really bad. I would say anybody who has this Marvel subscription, just dig that up and read it, because it's really dumb.
It is like a Mystery Science Theater quality comic book.
But it has a bunch of cool shit in it, and I can see like a kid especially in the 60s, just feeling like, this is like badass. There's a full-on brawl that happens in a toy store where they're the size of the toys, that's pretty sweet. And all the artwork in these makes them all worth 12 cents, even if you erased all the copy. But I do think that Fantastic Four and that Hulk are probably worth the most. The Fantastic Four was like a lot of bang for your buck. That was a big story.
Yeah.
And I was happy that it ended. I mean, like, it
wasn't part of a larger story.
It wasn't it didn't leave you hanging. Yeah. And I wondered also, is that common in back there to, like, have a fully self-contained story instead of these arcs that you see in modern comics?
Yeah, for the first few years, they're all pretty much self-contained. They do start getting where
cross-referential and callbacks and things like that.
Yeah, and then there will be, like, you know, a few years down the road, there will be, like, an epic story would be, like, one that went over two issues or three issues, you know.
Just so you know, like with the Hulk and the Fantastic Four and Thor to some extent, you just got to the level where they're not explaining the origin story completely every issue.
Yeah, I can see that being weird about starting a new character.
Yeah, totally.
So, Brian, how about you?
Yeah, you know what? Noah made a persuasive case. I'm going to say I think they're all worth the price of admission this month. The one that comes closest to not being is definitely Strange Tales, the Human Torch story. But, you know, I do think the Ant-Man story is just so absolutely bonkers that it's totally worth it.
It's just like everything about it is like it's the time, it's the era too. Just the fact that DDT is the hero of the story in a way.
And radiation just makes a totally intelligent,
yeah.
You know,
as intelligent as a man. Needle. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not just that, but he can speak telepathically to all the insects, which yeah. I, you know what? I'm starting to think that story is cool. And now I'm thinking the story is well-written.
All right. Well, on that note, we're going to wrap this up. Thanks for listening to yet another episode of this. You can find us on the internet at marvelbythemonth.com and get us on Instagram at marvelbythemonth, on Twitter at marvelbtm. And you can get us on Facebook, facebook.com/marvelbythemonth. Noah, if someone wants to harass you online, where can they find you?
I don't know. I'm not.
You got any good social feed? Instagram?
No, I've got an Instagram. It's, I don't remember what it is. Noah_Campbell.
Sounds not, plausible.
I don't actually know what my own Instagram handle is. I'm on Twitter, but I don't. I'm a lurker.
Yeah.
I know you post like things on Instagram.
If you want to just keep your secret identity, you can have that as well.
I got nothing for you. My Instagram is not very exciting. Actually, you'll probably be pretty bummed to go there.
Do you guys want to plug your musical project? Are you at a musical project plugging stage?
I could say that. Yeah, Noah plays with me in a musical project called Devil Bots, and we are getting close to actually unveiling at least the first attempt of these songs in front of the public. So, and he's a great guitar player. Yeah. Nice.
Noah, do you want to hype the awesome place you work?
No.
All right. Well, thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week for next month. Bye-bye.